they aren't just all David Koresh, Charles Manson going out in a blaze of glory. Because now we have brand cults who use cult-like tactics to lure you and our patients in. So today we discuss how these brand cults have affected the healthcare industry. Could you be part of a cult? Our guest, Dr. Mara Einstein, is an internationally recognized expert on deceptive marketing tactics and the intersection of marketing and religion. She's the author of 8 books, including Hoodwinked, How Marketers Use the Same Tactics as Cults. Prior to being a professor of media studies, she worked as a marketing executive at numerous advertising agencies, as well as MTV and NBC. She's featured in the Emmy-nominated Netflix documentary, Buy Now, The Shopping Conspiracy, which is about overconsumption and its impact on people and the planet, and the Discovery Plus docuseries, Cult of Fear. But first, a word from our sponsors. Hey, this is Brad Block, host of The Physician's Guide to Doctoring. This is a personal and professional development podcast for physicians where we have experts on the show that try to teach us everything we should have been learning while we were memorizing Krebs cycle. Hey there, it's Brad. As someone who's passionate about podcasting, I've always thought there should be more support for physicians who want to share their stories and expertise. That's why we're launching Doctor Podcast Network.
We're bringing together a community of physician podcasters with one goal in mind: to provide the tools, connections, and resources you need to grow your show. So whether you've been podcasting for a while or maybe you're just starting, we've designed this network to support you every step of the way, and we're going to help each other rise, not compete.
If this sounds like something you'd benefit from, we'd love for you to join us as we get closer to launch. So you can sign up at drpodcastnetwork.co for early access. Stay tuned for more details in the coming weeks. Really looking forward to what we can create together. Dr. Podcast Network, where doctors podcast.
Dr. Podcast Network, where doctors podcast.
Dr. Podcast Network, where doctors podcast.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
So, your expertise is in cults and marketing and the relationship between the two. So why am I having you on a podcast to speak to physicians, right? What should doctors know about how cults work? What's the connection there?
There's a couple of things to think about in terms of cults and how cults work in our society. Part of the thing is that particularly those of us who are maybe in our 40s, 50s, and 60s, and maybe even younger, think about cults in terms of things like Jim Jones or Charles Manson or Waco. And that is just a very limited understanding of what cults are. And that's only been our thinking about what cults were in that sense for about 50 years. Way back when, cults were just about people who looked up within a religious context was a religious sect that venerated an idea or a person. And then it became broadened out to not just be about religion, but could be secular things as well. Then we had this very intense period in the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, where you had these very dangerous religious cults where people ended up killing themselves or hurting others. But now what we have, again, in the digital age is a space where cults are more broadly understood and almost go back to where we were in the 19th century in terms of our understanding of what cults are. Why that's important to us now is that cults are not just this very sort of finite, dangerous religious groups. We have cults permeating all parts of our society.
Hold on. Before you go any further, yeah. I think we need to define what a cult is, because we keep on mentioning that word. And I think for people to really understand why initially we had that narrow definition, it's got to be religion, and now we can expand it. But let's take a step back and just say we're using that word. What does that even mean? What are the contexts in which we're using that?
Cult is simply a group of people who coalesce around an idea. It's that simple.
That seems broad, because we often use it in a pejorative way. And if you're coalescing around an idea, like it could be your love of candy corn. And I wouldn't think of that as a cult. Maybe I'm just not understanding the definition.
So then there become aspects of cults. And so I talk about cult tactics in the book. And so what are the things that really get people to become part of, more immersed in a cult. And there's different levels. Let's talk about, there's a spectrum of cults and cult activity. So on the one hand, it's funny you said candy corn. So one of the things I talk about is brand cults. And if you were going to ask somebody about a brand, probably the first thing they would say is Apple, right? Because you buy a phone, you get an iPad, you have the computer, they all interact with each other. And the next thing you know, you're in this Apple walled garden that you can't get out of. I mean, you can, but you can't. But it's also got this charismatic figure that you look up to. And even though he's long gone, people still think of Steve Jobs and Apple and think of him as almost godlike in relationship to the creation of that brand. Now, not every brand has that kind of intense relationship between the consumer and the brand, but there are some where people do get a little overzealous in terms of their reaction or their relationship to the brand. So something like Nutella, people created World Nutella Day just because they liked the brand so much.
Bunch of Nutella zealots out there.
There are. And then they create community around it. So that's the important thing to know in terms of cults, is one of the things that they try to do is create community.
And well, community seems great, because I did an episode a while ago with Dr. Jordan Grummet. He's a physician and he writes a lot about purpose. He wrote a book on purpose. And one of the things that's important to identifying your purpose is then you find your community. And so community, we're tribal. Community is part of what brings us joy and safety, connection, and all these things that make life wonderful. Right. So how are we making the distinction? And the example that he used is people that collect comic books, right? Like innocuous stuff versus, would you call that, I guess if you go to Comic-Con, you'd be like, whoa, this is a cult. But there's some there.
There's specific recruitment and retention tactics that cults use. And those are replicated in various spaces. Not all of them use, but the vast majority of them are. So for instance, one of the things is to find vulnerable prospects. Find people who you think will be interested in the idea that you're trying to sell. That's the first thing that they want to do. Then they try to surround them with love bombing. Tell them how wonderful they are, how fabulous they are, how you want to be part of the group. And part of this is a real natural response, in that if you are in a vulnerable state where you don't know anybody, or you've just gone through a very difficult time in your life, and somebody says, I have this group, I have this community, I have this, now they won't tell you right away ideology, they will just tell you group, that can help you feel better. Of course, people are going to do that because you want to relieve the stress and anxiety in your life.
We need a tribe.
And so you say, sure.
We need their safety numbers, right? The lone wolf dies, the pack survives, you need a tribe. Right. And so if you find yourself suddenly tribeless, that's a really dangerous place to be. Right. So your brain's going to want to find safety and comfort in another tribe. And so if someone comes along to that vulnerable person and says, hey, come join our group, right? Those are the people. So they'll find susceptible people. So if we have a charismatic leader coalescing around an idea and finding susceptible people who are, I guess, rudderless would be a way to describe. But again, but
the other thing is, one of the things too is that this is where you get into real cult, sort of dangerous cult area versus a more benign sort of cult. And that is an organization that provides an all-encompassing worldview that will answer all of life's questions. That's when it starts to get dangerous.
Well, that just sounds like religion, no? Any religion does that, right?
Yes, but I would I'm not a religion scholar. Okay. I always get a little...
Fine. Let's take it back. We could go down that rabbit hole, but we're talking about...
Step it back a little.
How people get you to buy stuff and marketing departments use cult tactics. That's really what we're talking about here. So actually, I could bring you back a little more again, why did doctors need to listen to this episode? Why should they continue listening right now? What is it specifically that they should know about it?
There are certain tactics that cults use in order to be able to get people to move further and further in. And one of the things that they do, or part of the process, is that they use deception. They lure people in with deception. They don't start by telling you that they are, nobody who's in a cult thinks they're in a cult. And nobody gets into a cult because somebody said, hi, I have a cult, come join us. What happens is that somebody says, come have a free dinner, come take a yoga class. My friend just changed their life because they went to this meeting. And it is almost inevitable that someone joins the group because a friend or a family member asked them to join.
Makes sense.
And that's as true of cults as it is of buying products.
Okay.
It's true all the way along. So we think about advertising, right? And we think, oh, I bought something because I saw an ad, or I bought something because an influencer made me buy it. That isn't really true, because there's usually one more influential person who has seen it, and then they tell their friends who tell their friends who tell their friends. And in terms of the way that marketing works now, we used to talk about effective frequency, which is that people needed to see an ad three times or see the message three times before they heard it, understood it, got it, integrated it, and thought, okay, that's something I want to go to a store and buy. Not now. Now it's 7 to 13 times.
Wow.
So people need to hear a message over and over
again. Is that because we're bombarded with so many messages that it's hard to, if it's only three, as opposed to so many other messages that you're seeing on a higher repetition, there's competition in your brain for who gets the attention?
It's partially that, and it's partially that we used to share all the same media. When I was growing up, there were three broadcast networks, and 90% of people watched NBC between 8 and 11 o'clock at night. And so all of us were seeing the same commercials and might talk about them amongst ourselves. Now, we don't share the same media space. Mm-hmm. Nobody shares the same media space with anybody else, ever. And so it might be that one influencer talks about it, or somebody else talks about it, or a friend of yours talks about it, or you happen to see an ad, and all of those things coalesce to get you to buy into a topic. But in terms of ideas, ideology, things that may or may not be healthy for people, is there something known as social proof? And social proof is this idea that if you do see something over and over again, that you begin to think that is something that is acceptable. And that's where the Joe Rogans and the Ben Shapiros and all those other sort of bro-like podcasters have gotten to be very successful, is they appear on each other's show. And what happens when they do that is that they give them more credence, and they don't feel like they're promoting each other. It just feels, oh, this is my guy and I appeared on his show. And so you begin to think, oh, I've seen Joe Rogan on this show, and I've seen him on this show, and I've seen him on the third show. And I begin to think, oh, what he is saying is something I should begin to believe.
So is this like in-group versus out-group? There's the cult in-group, and if you're not in the in-group, then you're in the out-group. And if you're part of this like podcast where they're on each other's shows, then they identify each other as the in-group, and therefore everyone. And if you're someone who listens to it, then therefore you're part of the in-group.
That's part of it. But when I'm talking about in-groups and out-groups, and this is true in terms of religion, that's how religions define themselves always.
Yeah. One of us versus not one of us.
In-groups and out-groups. Yeah. And all groups define themselves that way. But what has happened within the digital media space is that we have become siloed based on what our interests are. Now, don't ever forget, all of that's being done in the service of advertising. This is all happening. We are separating us into groups who cannot communicate with one another, because Facebook and Meta, Google and Amazon want to sell more advertising.
So they claim to be about connection, whereas reality, they're dividing us in order to sell us stuff, in order to keep more of our attention. If you're on the couch scrolling and not hanging out with your friends, you're buying more stuff, which is really interesting, because there's all of this, listen, you're burnt out, you're tired. Oh, I'm someone who loves to cancel plans. And if they perpetuate that idea and make it more acceptable to cancel your plans because you're so tired, what are you going to do? You're going to consume more of their media and therefore buy more stuff. Right. They can sell more advertising. Right. And you're not connecting with your friends, which is better for your health than sitting.
And they call it the community. Yeah. Zuckerberg, whether you love him or you hate him, was not stupid when he called the grouping of people together on Facebook a community. Yeah. Because he's overtaken that word, and we need to take it back, frankly, because you can't have a community of 3 billion people.
Mm-hmm.
You spent years learning how to save lives, but no one taught you how to secure your own. When you work one-on-one with a CFP professional financial coach, you get a blueprint tailored for the long game of your complex situation. At My Financial Coach, they help physicians choose the best strategy to optimize your annuities and investments, implement tax-saving strategies, and tackle debt like your student loans or mortgage while refining your path to retirement. Save up for that boat, a child's college or wedding, or even a vacation home. Plan ahead for the impacts of the unexpected and understand how much life insurance you actually need. Project how getting married, raising children, or taking care of an aging parent affects the progress towards your goals. Advice-only financial planning through a fixed monthly subscription, not commissions, to keep planning unbiased and in your best interest. A financial plan isn't just about your money, it's about your future. Visit myfinancialcoach.com/physicians guide to doctoring to meet with a financial coach and find out if concierge financial planning is right for you. Again, myfinancialcoach.com/physicians guide to doctoring. So marketing uses those cult tactics. When you talk about your book, Identity, Purpose, and Belonging, and so they send these messages to our patients that they're hearing about things they need to do and stuff they need to buy. And a lot of times this is the in-group is it's alternative medicine or integrative medicine or spirituality. So that becomes the in-group. And then we, mainstream medicine, become the out-group. So how do we compete with that? How do we compete with this? Because they are leveraging the emotions and getting to people when they are at their most vulnerable in order to pull them away from science and medicine and what's actually better for them. Right. So how do we compete with that without compromising on our integrity and ethics?
I would say a couple of things about that. What you're asking is, how do we get people out of a cult? I think that's the
bottom line.
Not even when they're in a cult,
but for those that, like, because there's all these people who haven't drifted into that cult. And we're talking about these anti-vaxxers, the MAHA people. So there's some that are firmly in there and we need to get them out. I think that's a separate question. What I'm talking about is, what type of messaging do we use when they've got these levers to pull because they have no scruples? So are there physician creators that are out there putting themselves out there on social media, talking to patients in the office, right? Like, how do we talk to people? How do we message so that we're competing with those that are using these tactics?
Okay. Couple of things, because I want to break this down. One, the idea that anyone is immune to being pulled into these kinds of cults is something that needs to get quashed right away, because we are all at some point vulnerable. That's one. Two, we don't know whether or not the people who are creating that content are creating that content because they believe it, or they're creating that content because they have been incentivized by the digital space and the platforms to create that content because they're going to make more money. So that's one part of the equation. The other part of the equation, and I don't know that there's a specific answer to this. There's not a quick snap your finger answer to getting people out of these kinds of belief systems. What we can look to is the anti-MLM movement, which has been incredibly successful in starting to break that down. Now, it's taken years. It's not going to happen tomorrow, but it has taken years. And you are starting to see that industry collapse. Really? And one of the things I talk about in Hoodwinked is that MLMs are the same thing as cults. I've talked to experts. I've talked to people in MLMs, and they are exactly the same thing. They work exactly the same way. And so one of the things that you can do if people are interested, and one of the ways that anti-MLMers have been really successful, is they create content for spaces like YouTube, and they make it look like in the beginning that it is MLM content, and then they spin it halfway through to be anti-MLM content. And the algorithm picks it up as MLM content, and so people within MLMs begin to see the content and all of a sudden start to have cognitive dissonance around what they have been doing.
And so they come to the ideas themselves versus someone talking to them and trying to intervene and pull them out of the cult. It gets into their heads, which makes them second guess their decisions. So they come to the decisions themselves rather than someone trying to convince them. Okay.
Yes. And as of now, I'm not your kind of doctor. I'm a different kind of doctor. I would say listen to what they're saying, but don't poo-poo it, because nothing will make them dig in their heels more than you saying that somebody is
actually
wrong.
We had an episode maybe a year or two ago by, I apologize, I can't remember his name, but he wrote the book, How to Talk to a Science Denier, right? And basically the thesis was, you can talk to a science denier. You can't convince them. The only way to, all you can do and all you should do is listen. Listen and be an empathetic ear. And that goes to when you're talking to your patients in the office, right? When you're talking to your patients in the office and they come up with some like conspiracy cult thing, don't try and undermine it. Just listen. Just listen. Right. And then make your recommendations for their medical care without necessarily addressing those concerns. Keep them as a patient. Don't alienate them, because you're going to push them further down the rabbit hole. They need that touch point of their doctor, someone they can trust and turn to when they need someone for medical care. So I think that's what you were getting at, right?
Yes. And what you're saying is exactly right. To take that a little bit farther is that when people decide that they are not in a cult, when they realize that they're in a cult and they want to get out, what keeps them in longer is thinking that they have no place to go, thinking they have no one to
turn to. Like being in an abusive relationship.
Yeah, exactly right. And so if you as a physician make sure that you let your patients know, I will be here for you no matter what, then they know they have a place to go, and they know they have a safe space.
So something that I definitely want to get to during this episode is that a lot of physicians are parents, definitely some of my listeners, because we talk about this on the show. So not from the physician perspective, but more for the parenting perspective. How can we make sure that we equip our kids in this rapidly changing digital world to resist those manipulative marketing tactics? Because they are vulnerable. Those kids, like teenagers, holy cow.
Yeah. First and foremost, I would say, bear in mind that none of the people in Silicon Valley allow their kids to touch a phone when they're kids. So they know exactly how bad this technology is for them, which is why they wouldn't let their kids
touch it. Like the makers of Frosted Flakes not allowing their kids to eat Frosted Flakes. That makes sense.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly right. It's totally the same thing. Now, you can't be with your kid all the time, unfortunately, but when my daughter was little, whenever she watched TV, I sat down with her and went over it with her. That's not to say you can't do that with your kids with their phone. I think one of the big problems that I see with people with their phones is, and it's more the nannies than the parents, is that when the kid starts to cry, though I've seen parents do this too, they hand the kid the phone. And so children are not learning how to self-pacify.
Yes, they're not learning to sit with discomfort. Yes.
Or boredom. I think one of the best things that parents can do is find lots of time in their lives when they put the phone away, so the kids don't see you with your phone all the time.
Yeah, they do what I do, not what I say. And, and then, yeah, they'll see us doing it.
Also, in terms of the advertising and marketing, as it relates to kids, as it relates to anybody, frankly, is that you have to look at it. What I taught my daughter when she was younger, my daughter's now 25, what I said to her all the time is advertising lies. Not true. That isn't really true, because having worked in the industry, I know that we have to go through all kinds of things. But I knew from a young age that she understood. Yeah. She could understand advertising lies. And she was spouting that out to her friends all the time. And so I think the same idea can be applied to social media, is tell your kids when they are engaging with the content, assume that what is being presented to you is a lie, until and unless you can find out otherwise. Yeah. But assume that what is being presented to you is not fact, and start from that basis. But I would also make sure, if and when you can, to be sitting by your kids and help them deconstruct the content.
That's interesting. Explain That's how I approach
them.
Life.
Oh, they're shocked.
I start from a baseline of everyone is a bit full of it. And then we go from there. And then you have to prove yourself otherwise. Yeah.
Which is really interesting, because our natural tendency is to have truth bias, which is to assume everybody's telling the truth, which is fine in a face-to-face.
Yes.
But it's really good to spin that the other way when you're online spaces. That's a great idea. It's a perfect idea.
Fantastic advice for parents. So what about ourselves? How do we steel ourselves, right? Because Maha is a great example of a cult. They have a charismatic leader in RFK Jr. Yep. And they've got an in-group because they're the followers of it. They've got identity. They've got purpose. They've got belonging. They've got everything that comes with a cult. It is a bona fide cult, right?
Yep.
And there are a lot of smart people, accomplished people, intelligent people. They are at least academically accomplished physicians. In order to be one of us, you have to be academically accomplished. Otherwise, you couldn't have gotten here. Right. And so if it can happen to them, it can happen to us. So how do we resist? Not just specific to that cult, but how do we resist being in any cult?
Don't ever be vulnerable.
Well,
no.
Okay.
No, but
lots
serious.
Of friends of varied interests. So you can move from group to group. Okay. There's something there.
One of the big things that I recommend to people is we have a propensity to finish up the day. You've had dinner, you've cleaned the dishes and the table and you put the kids away and you sit down and you get on your phone.
That sounds like my
Okay. Because it's when you're exhausted. It's when you're least likely to pay attention to the content that you're interacting with. Way back when we sat down and watched TV. That's cool, right? You could sit down and watch TV. It's not tracking your data. Yeah. It's not figuring out what your emotional state is. Yeah. It's not trying to, they're trying to sell your stuff, but it's based on assumptions.
The physician audience should be suspending the ads. You all have enough income. You can pay the $3 a month to not have ads run across your feed. Your time is worth it. Your time is very valuable. So yeah, they shouldn't even be seeing the ads.
Yeah. But it's not that. It's no matter what you did, what you were doing online, what you were doing on television, if your TV is connected to the internet, which most people are, it is reading all of the data about you and it's integrating it, including every time you go to a store, if you go to your local CVS or whatever your local drugstore is, and you use that little card and they scan it, then that's helping to track your offline experiences or buying habits with what you do online. So all of that stuff is being integrated. But the issue with getting on your phone at the end of the day, when you're tired, when you're exhausted, is you are, one, it doesn't have a natural stopping point, right?
Yeah.
Unlike a film, you get to the end of a movie, it's done, you walk away, you're finished. That's not true. The technology on your phone is created for you to be in an endless scroll. So you don't have a natural stopping point. The other part is it's created for you to think fast, not slow. Daniel Kahneman's idea of thinking fast and slow. It wants you to think with emotion. It doesn't want you to think with your head. And when you're tired and exhausted, you are going to be more likely to buy into what is being presented to you. So I recommend to be more intentional when you are using your phone. I suggest finding times and places where you won't allow the phone to be, particularly if you have kids. Don't allow the phone at the kitchen table, the dinner table. Sherry Turkle talks about that, right? And how even if the phone is there, even if it's at the table, you are going to be conscious of wanting to pick it up and interact with it. And it also, we forget how to have those uncomfortable pauses that, oh, I have to think of what the next thing to say.
And that's where a lot of great ideas come from, right? That's where people have their epiphanies during those types of moments.
Yeah.
We need those.
That's what all this conversation about ChatGPT and students cheating on their papers and all of that. And I have all kinds of issues with that, but that's for another conversation. But what's really disturbing about it is this idea you talk about, which is that you don't come up with your own ideas when you're constantly engaging with other people's ideas. And the only way that you do come up with new ideas is by having that information embedded in your system to understand it fully. And Lee Strasberg, who is a famous acting teacher, talked about you create new ideas by taking two existing ideas and putting them together in a new way. Well, you can only do that if you understand what those two old ideas, and you don't do that if you're constantly looking it up on Google or you're having ChatGPT create it for you.
So I have two more questions and they're interrelated. Right. One of them is, is there any way that we can use cult tactics to our advantage to spread good information about science, public health that are to people's advantages? First, should we? And two, if the answer is yes, what are they?
Yes, absolutely. Part of the reason for writing Hoodwinked was one, to explain to people what the cult tactics are, and so that they can recognize them, but to also understand that they permeate all of our society and they can be used for good. So one of the things that we've already talked about here is the idea of community. Can you create a community for people around health, doing things that are good for them? The key issue and the difference between getting into a dangerous cult versus a cult that is good for people is having a charismatic cult leader that's going to tell somebody what to do. One of the things that is more helpful is to keep a sort of level bureaucratic system so that it's not a hierarchy, that it's a flat system, so that everybody is able to have their input in that. So that's one of the things that I would say. Give people a space to feel like they're heard and they're part of a community. There's a book that I read called The Wrong Way Home. It's by a psychologist or psychiatrist named Arthur Dieckmann or Dieckmann. And he talks about the eye level world. And it's about seeing people at the same level as you, seeing people face to face. And to in another time, we would have talked about being in another person's shoes. And I think that's a lot of what we don't do today in the social media space. If somebody disagrees with us, we pile on. Or we're talking to a bot, which is even worse and utterly a waste of our time. And so I think it's about finding more and better ways, maybe more interesting ways for people to engage face to face. Because if you want to compete with online, you can compete with online. You just have to find ways that's going to make it interesting enough for people to show up.
Yeah, but a lot of time the information that you have is broccoli and they're being given chocolate ice cream. So it's really hard.
I was just going to say, I think as I have gotten older and my body doesn't do all the things that I want it to do, I think it's really hard to explain to people that are younger that these things are going to affect them longer term. But maybe that's part of it, is having older people engage with younger people. Because when that happens, some really exciting things begin to happen.
Yeah, there stops being adversity, right? There stops being competition. Oh, this is so Gen Z. This is so millennial. This is so boomer. And then everyone forgets about Gen X.
Yeah.
Okay, so last question, and possibly my most important one. I saved it for the end, as any good interviewer does, right? How can I use cult tactics to get more people to listen to my podcast? I stumped you. It's okay. We can end with that.
No,
we can end with
that. My head first went into my consulting mode before it went into my cult marketing mode. I guess the first thing I would want to know is what you're doing to promote your podcast to begin with. But the other thing is, how are you making people feel like they are part of this physician community and that you are providing a space for them to be able to engage with a group of people that they can't do someplace else?
I just talk at them and hope they listen. So currently nothing.
Okay. The other thing is, how are you making them feel like they are important to being part of this group? Which is the love bombing thing, but love bombing.
If they would only email me or DM me, that's what I'll do. So guys, I want to hear from you. What do you want to hear about? Who do you want to hear from? Okay. So now I'm love bombing them.
You can love bomb them. Yeah. Don't lure them with deception. Be really honest and tell them who you are. I think one of the most important things that anyone can do is to not, I hate the word authentic. I hate that word because it's been so misused.
It's like burnout. It's just everyone just talks about it.
It's so misused. But if you can be really honest about who you are and as much as you can connect to people from a heart space about why you're doing this, be really clear about why you're doing this, then that's how you get people to follow you. And I'll give you a great example, just from my own experience. I'm not the face of a person that you expect to see on TikTok, truly. I'm 40 years older than most of the people that you see on that space. But I go on to that social media space and I talk about what I know. And I talk about it from a place of wanting to give to the people who come to see me. And if you're really clear about what you want to do and why you want to be there, people will find you and more of them will want to engage with the information you present.
Fantastic. An excellent way to close. Dr. Mara Einstein, author of Hoodwinked, How Marketers Use the Same Tactics as Cults. Thank you so much for your time. And thank you for all you do to lift up the wool that's been pulled over everyone's eyes.
Thanks so much for having me.
Thanks for listening. I have a favor to ask. You listened to the episode until the end, which means you either fell asleep or you really liked the episode. So please share it or like it or comment on a social media post or write us a 5-star review, something. It would really help me out. And maybe what you learned from this episode can help someone else too. The views expressed in this episode are those of the interviewer and interviewee and don't represent the views of their employer or even their significant other. Even though the magic of podcasting make it sound like I'm talking directly to you, this is not a doctor-patient relationship, and this is not medical advice or financial advice or really any advice. Thank us again for listening to The Physician's Guide to Doctoring.